Good afternoon. I'd like to call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Today's Wednesday, March 20th. Let the record reflect the time is 1:31. Today we have present Vice Chair Senator Reinbold, Senator Michicki, Senator Schauer, Senator Keel, and myself, Chair Hughes. Please silence or turn off your cell phones. Thank you to those assisting us. As committee members, let's keep our questions and comments focused on the bill before us, and we will table our speech making, mine included, so we complete our scheduled agenda work. Concise questions, thoughtful brevity are the order of the day and greatly appreciated. We have one item on today's agenda. We'll be bringing back Senate Bill 89 by the Senate Rules Committee, Legislature, Ethics, Conflicts by the Senate Rule, in Legislature, Ethics, and Conflicts. The committee heard SB 89 this Monday. It was introduced by Senator Coghill, and Mr. Hutchinson took the committee through a sectional analysis, and we opened and closed public testimony. Today we'll consider amendments to the legislation. If it's the will of the committee, I'd like to move the bill out. So, to get started, Senator Keel, would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number one.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Amendment number one maintains disclosures of conflicts in committee. So it would not change the language of the bill with regard to, or the effect of the bill with regard to conflicts and how they're handled on the floor. This would simply add back the need to disclose a conflict before voting on a question in committee.
Members have questions for Senator Keel.
Did someone object for purpose of discussion?
Oh, sorry. Senator Schauer.
I was wondering on some of these, Madam Chair, if we might get the original sponsor or the legal representation to come up and give us their opinion.
Yes.
On how these
certainly
work.
We can do that. Senator Conco, Mr. Hutchinson.
Madam Chair, Senator Coghill, Senate Seat B, North Pole, Fairbanks area. And with me is
Chad Hutchison, Madam Chair, Senate Majority Counsel.
Would you like me to address the question immediately on the amendment, or do you want a specific question, Madam Chair?
If you could just let us know what you think of this amendment, and if Senator Schauer has a follow-up question for you.
Sure. Madam Chair, this question came up when we actually introduced the bill in front of the committee, and my answer was light because this is a reasonable approach. When it becomes unreasonable, if I understand, is if the other two amendments get added to it, then it becomes unreasonable. And so at this point, if you pass this, it does no harm. It will just add one more layer of your conflict declaration, which if the way we have it in this bill, the declarations are fairly narrow and pretty clear. If you go into other language where you broaden it out, then it becomes unclear, then this would become a problem, just for what it's worth.
Senator Schauer, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to be clear, Senator Coghill, if Amendment 1 as read and looking at the language, in your opinion and that of your legal expert, for lack of a better term, Chad, this would not change the intent of Senate Bill 89, and it would not change or have any unintended consequences for the things that we're trying to fix. Is that a true statement for the record?
Best of my knowledge, yes. It still requires you to declare, but it at this point, it still is subject to the uniform rule, which means you can have an objection within the committee and that objection be overruled. Once again, it puts the committee in that position of determining if it's a real conflict or not, which I think is appropriate.
And Senator Schauer, through the chair, we also have Dan Wayne available online.
He just has joined us, yes. It just popped up when you said it.
Oh.
Thanks for saying that, Chad.
That's pretty good.
Something was happening. Yeah. Senator Schauer, we have Dan Wayne online, too, and one of the questions that we've asked him behind the scenes is there another effect as it relates to the legislative ethics statutes on a broad-based sense beyond SB 89? And that might be a worthy question for him to see if there's a broadened scope beyond SB 89.
And I would like, I was waiting for him because I actually was curious whether it would bleed over and we could end up with some unintended restrictive interpretation down the line. And so, Dan, I hope you can hear us. I'm going to bring you online now if you could address amendment number one and let us know if you just heard the conversation that Chad and I just had.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did hear the conversation, I believe.
And introduce yourself, your name for the record, please.
Yes, this is Daniel Wayne. I'm a legislative counsel with the Legislative Legal Services Office and Legislative Affairs Agency. And I believe when you say Amendment 1, you're talking about what was drafted as Amendment U.2.
That is correct. That is correct.
And that amendment does not have any effect outside of the section it's amending. All it does is add a requirement that you declare a conflict of interest before voting on a question before a committee.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad to get that on the record. I think that's very helpful and reassuring for me. I think many of us have actually gotten in the habit, even before the recent changes to ethics laws, a lot of folks are doing that anyway. So are other comments? Did you have other follow-ups? Senator Michicki.
So this just brings up an issue with legislative ethics. I've been involved in several of the key industries in our state, and I've always just risen and declared a perceived conflict because I want my constituents to know that I'm a fisherman. Yes, I've been involved in the oil and gas industry, and I recognize that there's the perception that I could have a conflict, but I've gone through ethics and gotten a ruling on whether it is or not, and I've never had a conflict. So this amendment is only requiring if you have an actual conflict. And that's in accordance with this new bill the way it is, which is a substantial class of persons. If it affects you differently than a substantial class of persons to which the legislator belongs, legislators need to think for themselves as well, as many of us have done, about listing a perceived conflict, which just doesn't require it. I'm not suggesting an amendment. But this is going to be on a very limited case, just like it will be on the floor. And we all often get challenged because we have jobs or we have relatives that have jobs, and it doesn't clarify. Nothing about this clarifies that issue, and neither did HB 44, because if you take it to the perceived conflict thing, that's really the responsibility of each legislator when they're talking to their constituents, and I think that's equally important. So I guess what I'm saying is I would be doing this anyway. Except I would.
Madam Chair, this is Dan Wayne. I have a street cleaning machine going past my window.
Yep.
And so I'm having a hard time hearing.
Okay. Well.
Nothing I can really do about it.
Okay. Well, thank you.
They'll be gone in a couple minutes.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wayne. I'll let Senator Michicki finish his comments. I'm not sure it would require your response anyway. So go ahead,
okay,
Senator Michicki.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it will not. But thank you. So I guess what I'm saying is I don't have a problem with this because this is what I would do normally, and I think that's what most of us do normally. I think this amendment is fine. At some point, we really need to talk about, I think both are important, and at some point, we need to talk about that going forward, Madam Chair, but that's I don't have a problem with the amendment as it's written.
Thank you, Senator Michicki. Are there other comments? Would the sponsor like to say anything additional?
I would voice an agreement with that amendment and recognize that what Senator Michicki is talking about is we have a real practical problem on how to describe a real conflict, mm-hmm. and a political problem on the political conflicts. And those sometimes cross over, and we have to deal with the press and all that. But when somebody is really, for real, getting a benefit that is unusual to anybody else, we really should let them off. Mm-hmm. There's a reason to do that. But the balance is that for us, at least 32,000 plus people depend upon us to represent that area. Mm-hmm. So it has to be within that tension of it has to be so real that you are let off. And to date, we just haven't had that kind of a problem come before us. But we've had the political problem in many, many ways.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Do you have any wrap-up comments, Senator Keel?
Madam Chair, no. I think if thoughtful brevity is the order of the day, I appreciate the comments and commend Amendment 1.
And seeing no further comments, I will remove my objection. And seeing no further objections, the amendment is adopted. Thank you. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number two, which your sheet is headlined Conceptual Amendment 1 to SB 89. So, but amendment number two.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So amendment number two it takes the same structure we were just talking about in terms of when we must disclose a conflict, and sort of splits the difference between SB 89 as introduced and the law as it reads today. and it what amendment number two would do is require us to disclose if that extra income greater than a substantial class of other people, as Senator Machicki described, would benefit not just the legislator, but also the legislator's spouse or domestic partner, dependent children, or non-dependent children who are living with the legislator. And I lifted that, Madam Chair, directly from our public official financial disclosures. The only difference is in the POFD it says the disclosure's children or spouse, and this is the legislator's. So this is not as broad as what HB 44 did. It was your immediate family, whether they live with you or not. This would be the folks who are on that March 15 financial disclosure. If one of them would get an unusual benefit, greater than a class of people, we would have to disclose that as a conflict.
Thank you, Senator Keel, for the explanation. Since I have the sponsor here, you've worked in depth on this bill. What is your reaction to that amendment?
Madam Chair, I'm going to say no to the amendment. I think that it's a worthy discussion, so I'm not going to say it's not a worthy discussion. But let me just highlight the differences between what we do on our disclosure statement and what you do in ethics. One is for public comment on what your life looks like, and they get to make the choice. Under our ethics law, the choice is made by accusation. And what you have to do then is defend everybody else's action. And one of the reasons we decided to try to go back to the original language and reset was it created this ambiguity, this cloud of uncertainty that we don't know if your family members would be involved in things. And all of a sudden, you don't know if it's a real conflict or not. So this is tighter, there's no doubt about it, than the HB 44, but it still opens it up, and it actually tightens it down a little bit, but it still leaves open that ambiguity. So I would ask that you reject it and keep it what I would say a cleaner approach, which is kind of a reset to what we have been working under before, which has worked very well.
Mr. Hutchinson, do you have any comment?
Madam Chair, I agree with Senator Keel that it's not as broad as HB 44, but it's still broad. And you think about a constitutional analysis and the constitutional duties of the legislative branch to fully implement and represent the will of the people, is this truly the least restrictive alternative? The answer is no, because the least restrictive alternative exists subject to the language that we're trying to return to pre-HB 44. So in that sense, I would say it is less broad, that is true, but it is still too broad.
Thank you. Are there comments from or questions from committee members? Senator Schauer?
Chad, could you explain a little further when you said the least the least restrictive? What would that be in this case? Because we had a long discussion last time on Monday.
Yes.
Where we talked about that. So what is that in this case?
So, Senator Schauer, through the chair, so whenever you're talking about least restrictive alternative, it goes back to the fundamental rights that we talked about in the presentation on Monday. There's Article 2 representation, the legislative duties that normal legislators have. You have the First Amendment and the free speech, the right to assembly, all those duties, they're all fundamental. That means that there must, if the government is going to restrict, because government can restrict those rights, that's true, but it has to be necessary to a compelling state interest, and it has to be narrowly tailored to have the least restricted alternative if you're going to restrict those sorts of fundamental rights. So what you're looking at here is representation in Article 2, and if you're expanding out the scope of conflict that someone could potentially have. For example, a domestic partner had I live with a domestic partner. There's other people that live with domestic partners. Do we necessarily know all their financial comings and goings if they have their own business? That may or may not be known. So in that sense, I do agree, like I said before, with Senator Keel, that it is less broad than HB 44, but it's still broad enough that I don't think you can reasonably consider it the least restrictive alternative, which is what you're shooting for.
And I'll just make a comment here, and I did tell the sponsor of the amendment, I think I did, that I have an adult child who does not live with me, but if he were to live with me, I'd be very concerned about running afoul of this, because even though I might get all the information on that magic March 15th date for my financial disclosure, for that, throughout the next year, I would not know necessarily what he's doing, and I would be in a situation where I wouldn't know I needed to declare a conflict, but I could be in conflict. And, you know, some spouses share bank accounts, some don't. And also, you know, we are the ones elected to this office and not our family members. And when we start spreading it to the entire family, it just, I can be responsible for me. And I can know what I'm doing, but I would not always be so sure what all the family, my family members are doing between those March 15th days. And that is a concern of mine, because I don't think one of us would want someone to run afoul and not be aware of it, but it very likely could happen. Senator Schauer?
I just want to add to that. I mean, I feel like the net we're casting when we do this is getting very large. I ran for office. My wife did not. My kids did not. So why am I including them in this as we go down that path? And I understand there can be conflicts of interest and ethics. I see where this has gone. For me, I've been neutral. I told the sponsor of the amendment, I'm pretty neutral on this. I'm a retired military guy, and I'm an airline guy. I'm about as vanilla as you get as far as conflicts with industries and those things. Like, I don't particularly care in that sense for me, how it affects me. But when I listen to the other things and I get an extra bill sent my way because somebody can't deal with it because of the conflict, and that person, is, like Senator Coggle said, represents the same number of people. I feel like I'm a fisherman out there with this net, and I just cast it over everybody. And I'm concerned that we are broadening this so much and making it so difficult that legislators are being prevented from doing their jobs. That's back to the least restrictive approach. And so that it's a little bit of pontificating, and I'm breaking Senator Hughes' rule a little bit. But this has affected me directly. It's just workload and what I'm trying to do because of something she can't do in her own committee. So I'm going to have to speak out against this one, because I feel like that net has gotten to – is still too broad. And I think it needs to be narrowly tailored enough that we can do our jobs effectively as legislators for the people we represent. I don't feel that some of this is allowing us to do that. And like I said, you're going to find I'm probably the most neutral one on this bill because of my background. So I apologize for that. There wasn't really a question, Madam Chair, but I think this was a really important issue that the people need to hear this on the record and understand that we're affecting the people they elected, their ability to do their job, by how wide this is. Yeah.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. Senator Michicki.
Well, the reason I'm not supporting Amendment Number 2 is not because, well, I'll tell you why it is, because my wife and I are that kind of couple that we have the same financial interest. We have the same investments. Mm-hmm. We are a unit. And when I'm thinking about whether or not I'm going to declare a conflict, I would take that into account. I mean, my wife is a homemaker today, but if she were to start a business, I would be starting a business with her. We don't, I think it's covered. I guess that's the point I'm making, is that it's covered in the original bill. But the reason for the POFD, the financial disclosure that we do annually, is in case there's one of those little outliers, you're really telling them everything. You're telling them everything that affects your family, which includes your spouse, your dependent children, and non-dependent children that are living with you, which I notice doesn't come up on your report. When you put one on there, it doesn't record the one for a non-dependent, so that's kind of interesting. But you're listing everything out so that you're making the public aware of any potential little connection. But that's different when we're here doing our job on a piece of legislation. It really should be something that directly either positively or negatively affects you because of a difference in that substantial class of person. So it's getting a little outside of the scope. I look at it the same way. I think it covers my life. I think it covers most people's lives that are in the legislature. If their wife is employed in this particular subject, they're going to declare. I mean, I think it's redundant personally in this case. That's the reason I'm not going to support Amendment Number 2, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Michiki. Are there any further comments or questions from members? Do you have any wrap-up comments, Senator Keel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do. And what's awkward about this conversation is that I'm talking to five honest and ethical people about contemplating one of our colleagues potentially not being. And it's tough to do because I don't think anybody here would cross that line. On the other hand, we have ethics laws that provide for the possibility of complaints to protect the public from that you know, rare critter that might be a legislator who doesn't share our values and our commitment to honest and open public service. And I think it's important that we think about that, you know, with the other bills we've been working on for the last month or so, right? Things that we would never contemplate doing, we have to have laws that cover them. So this is really about disclosure and voting on disclosure in committee, voting on the floor. So the POFD covers information to the public, and that provides information. The ethics law covers our behavior, and so they serve different purposes. And I appreciate that while the information is out there with the financial disclosure, those are updated annually, and it doesn't cover a legislator's behavior. Legislator's behavior needs to be sort of kept current and held to ethical standards all the time. So this amendment simply contemplates that, you know, unfortunate possibility of a legislator who would act in a way that would benefit their household more than other Alaskans. And the simple fact is that if I were to take some action that benefited my wife, that would be a benefit to my household even if we kept our accounts separate. And so I think it's worthwhile to include in these disclosures and this ask to be request to be excused on the floor your immediate family, your immediate household as described here, right? Person you're married to or equivalent, your dependent kids or the ones who live in your household. So I think that, you know, it's unfortunate we have to think about these things, but that this is a good, narrowly tailored list that really holds us to the folks who, if they got a particular benefit, it really would, as Senator Michiki said, really would directly benefit the legislator. So I hope I can convince you to support the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Keel. You haven't convinced me because I'm going to maintain my objection.
Madam Chair.
Senator Michiki.
I'm sorry. The fact that I guess I just wanted to explain a little further why this
please
covers the same way, whether or not I have the actual equity or ownership. If there's if the effect on me is substantial above a class of persons, it's a conflict. And a family member in my household affects me. If they were getting some benefit, that's why I think it's redundant. In my view, if my wife has a business and I'm about to pass a bill that directly affects her positively, it directly affects me positively. If that interest is substantial, I'm going to declare that same conflict. I believe it's covered. That's the reason for my opposition, is I believe it's redundant and it just bakes more words into the same thing, my view.
Just to that, you, to that Sticky, detail.
Senator Keel.
Thank you. To that detail, Madam Chair. That's why it's awkward, is because you disclose it, I disclose it, we would. But if my wife used to teach piano lessons, if there were a bill that had some particular significant benefit for piano teachers below the 59th parallel, that's not a class to which I belong. Right? So it wouldn't benefit me more than a substantial class of persons. It would benefit my wife more than a substantial class of persons to which she belongs. Piano teachers around Alaska. So that's, unfortunately, you know, it's that precise language writing thing. So that's why I think this really is an added step, not a redundancy.
And thank you for those final comments, Senator Keel. And as the chair, I have the privilege to make the final comment on that. And I will reiterate, because I can see Senator Michicki's point, and that is that it would benefit the household. So, yes, even though your wife's in a separate class, it does benefit the whole household. And so with that, I'm going to maintain my objection. And so, Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
No.
Senator Keel.
Yes.
Senator Reinbold.
No.
Senator Shower.
No.
Chair Hughes.
No.
One yay, four nays.
So a vote of one yay and four nays, the amendment fails. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Amendment 3, which is written as Conceptual Amendment 2, but has Amendment 3 handwritten there.
Object. And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. this amendment is written to cover a broader scope of income than the bill as introduced. And it's important that to note that it keeps the substantial class language there. But by excuse me. But by doing more than only the equity or ownership interest, by including financial loss or gain of $1,000 or more, it also includes salary. It also includes participation in a program where the legislator in question doesn't have an ownership stake. So it just gets at anything that would have the effect of putting cash in the pocket. And I would be entirely negotiable on the $1,000 threshold. I elected to put a threshold in there because there's a track record when we don't put a threshold in there. The Ethics Committee has this tendency to go to the gift limit of $250, which seems low to me. So I'd certainly be amenable to discussion on that $1,000 mark, but I wanted it to be higher than the gift limit standard, and broad enough to cover, I think, anything that puts cash in the individual's pocket. Just to sort of double back, I kept the substantial class language rather than HB 44's general public, so that we don't have to get in there and say, but it doesn't cover PFD bills, but it doesn't cover appropriation bills. This keeps it to really income or equity that the legislator themselves would get.
Thank you for that explanation, and I'll turn to the sponsor now, just to see what your comments are regarding amendment number 3.
Madam Chair, I'm going to speak against the amendment. I think what he's thought through is trying to figure out what the substantial loss or gain is. It's interesting, in another part, we have a substantial benefit or harm language. And he's right, there's a $250 limit in ethics dealing with gifts and our limitation on that. But this is dealing with a financial interest, so I think the $1,000 becomes extremely limiting and would make us start declaring a conflict for everything that we did over $1,000. And I think that's one of the things that you could get. And then how it would be interpreted would be new to me. So what you do is you add a complexity in putting that kind of restrictive language in there on how it might affect the other areas. Remember, I think there are 8 different areas that under this particular law that we live with, dealing with our conflicts. This, I don't know, this, I saw it today, and to his credit, the senator and I had a meeting on it earlier today, so I saw it. I told him that I was going to speak against it, mainly because I don't know what the impacts are, and it looks to me like it's more restrictive than what a substantial interest in a business or investment might be. And I think to put the $1,000 on it would fly in the face of anything what is considered substantial in those areas. And so I would speak against it.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Hutchinson, did you?
Madam Chair, from a constitutional perspective, I think it still has Article II problems. We're broadening the scope of potential conflict. We're always looking for the least restrictive alternative. Inflation is going to erode that number. If we pick a number in general, inflation is going to erode it. Think about HB 44 and the sponsor and the documents they provided. Only a few states had true monetary amounts, and frankly, Michigan and Texas, the ones that come to my mind, they both had $25,000. This is $1,000. So for those reasons, it'll suffer from problems.
All right. Senator Michiki.
I look at it the other way than the two gentlemen that just spoke. I actually think, and I don't support the amendment because I think it actually justifies some gain. I don't think there should be any. If I had a gain that was different than that substantial class of persons, if it were different, I would ask to be excused from voting. And whether that's beneficial or harmful, it doesn't matter the amount. If I could put my finger on me being affected differently, it means that I get a contract or I get some other benefit and I'm going to ask to not vote. This almost justifies a difference from the substantial class. So the reason I can't support it is there should be, in my view and my heart, there should be no difference on how it affects that circle of people that are being considered by that legislation. And this creates a difference. So I can't support it for that reason. I think it's clear that a conflict is a conflict. If you're benefiting outside of that circle, whatever that circle may be, if you're benefiting outside of that circle, the piano teacher circle, then you should not be voting on it. If it's harming you more or it's benefiting you more, you're getting a different effect, and you have a conflict and should declare it. So I'm not willing to put a dollar number on it because you should be looking at every issue to see if it affects you differently than that circle of people. And if it does, you should ask to be recused.
Senator Reinbold.
Thanks. basically, $1,000, it says fine. It's it could affect financial loss or gain. And I guess my whole thing in regards to this is they're still forced to vote on the budgets. You know, House Bill 44, that's one thing that I had a problem with. You know, it excluded a member from declaring a conflict and not voting on the budget. And that really bothered me in House Bill 44. For example, they could work, there could be a teacher or they could be a state employee or whatever, and they could be gaining either through a GEO-DIF, you know, which were pretty significant 4 years ago, the GEO-DIF increases, merit increases, COLA increases, step increases. There's four potential increases in union contracts that are in the budgets. It could really impact, I don't know if this means a trip. What if they take a trip when we're, you know, is that $1,000? Is that included in this? I don't know if I'm considering, you know, if your spouse takes a trip, maybe when we're for training or something, is it conference fees? I don't know if that's a financial gain or loss. Native corporations, I know, are sometimes there's benefit to them in the bill, you know, in the budget. It's going to make us micromanage everything. I also ask, when we heard House Bill 44, if we were going to pass that, then let's make our kids are going to have to do financial disclosures. I have no idea what my kids invest in or things like that. So it just seems like it's just very, very complicated and kind of gets in the web. So everyone will be just incredibly hypersensitive. You know, I absolutely believe that ethic laws are very, very, very important, but I think that this just gets just so low, and that really, you know, there's really serious issues with me with the budget where people really could be, you know, get financial gain, but yet they're forced to. So what are we really solving here?
Thank you, Senator Reinbold. And I almost called you Senator Laura. That was where I was going. Senator Schauer, did you have a comment?
Yes, ma'am. I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll say it again. I'm pretty neutral on this because to me the world's black and white. I don't like the gray area. I'm like, it's either right or it's wrong. You're moral or you're not. you're ethical or you're not. So I'm just not a gray area guy. I agree in one sense with Senator Keel that everybody should be behaving ethically. Hopefully they are, but sometimes people behave poorly. We have laws in place and other standards, but my concern, and Senator Michicki hit on this, so I wanted to ask again Senator Coghill and Chad to discuss this, was that it seems, I'm going to ask it in this vein, if you take out that number, what impacts would we have if it was written as is without the $1,000 in there, any limit, what would that do or impacts? Because it seems to me like, going back to his question, which was mine, is the substantial class of persons outside of that, and I'll just use his terminology, that circle, what would that impact be if it had, you know, zero or 10,000 or 25,000?
Yeah. Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Senator Michicki and Senator Keel, for bringing up the very good points that you brought up. In the actual language, you'll see one of the reasons why I think of the complexity of this. You start off with the word could affect, and that is the $1,000 gain or loss. And then added to that, and greater than the resulting financial loss or gain. And so you have a formulation in there that if you have a bad actor, you have to run it through this formulation, which is a new formulation, by the way. And so the plain language now says, hey, if you're getting a gain or a loss that's greater than that class of people, you've got to talk about it. Right now you're creating a new formulation, and that's why I said earlier, when you change one thing in here, it starts rippling through that. You already have a substantial benefit question. And then you have this gain or loss language that's already in the bill. If you change it to this could and greater than, you just add a couple more wrinkles, that's all. And I don't know what the impact of that is. And knowing that we live under this cloud this year, mm-hmm. we're trying to penetrate through this cloud. And I say cloud because we've created an ambiguity that makes us all wonder if we're ethical. And I appreciate the conversation. I truly do. I think being on the Ethics Committee, I can tell you what happens in the Ethics Committee is they look at every word that we put in there, and I think that's what we're doing right now. I appreciate that. For the bad actors have to answer to every word. This is a new formulation. The formulation has an exception in it, but it also has and then greater than. And so you just have to think, how does that add up? I don't know. But I know how the language we have in there adds up right now. And we're holding the legislator to a standard. This adds some elements to that standard that I'm not willing to go down the road on just yet.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. And I think maybe you just pinned that for me on this particular amendment. I'm not comfortable with intent language often because it ends up having who knows what consequences when it ends up being written as policy or regulation. Not knowing and having the uncertainty bothers me about what that would do and the unintended consequences as we go through this. And I think that's part of what we found from HB 44. There were a lot of unintended consequences that have just thrown us haywire this session trying to have people do their job. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that answer. I think that helped solidify my position.
Thank you. And I'll just say one concern I have, especially when you're dropping or adding the $1,000 that people ought to think about is now you're including your high school students in the kind of jobs, you know, even babysitting or something, then all of a sudden it's going to fit that low number. So just that's one thing that would be of concern to me. But the other thing, and it's kind of odd, but the words loss and gain and then the words, loss and gain, similar to the problem that we had with the harm and the benefit, strangely, and I'm going to use the healthcare now since I'm, have a conflict of interest right now with healthcare because my husband's in that industry. I would have a conflict of interest voting for something that potentially could lower, decrease. It would be a financial loss to him. I'd be wanting to press yes on the floor, and I'd want to push it in committee because I believe our healthcare costs are too high in the state of Alaska. I think when the harm and benefit, loss and gain, it usually would be that I would want to press no on this because I don't want to decrease my family's income. But because we use those words, it's hitting us from both angles. And that alone, to me, it is a problem. It gives me an aversion to the words loss and gain, as well as the way the harm and benefit played out. And so I agree with some of the earlier comments. I will not be supporting it. Are there any further comments before I let Jesse wrap up? Mm-hmm. Senator Michiki? No? Mm-hmm. All right, wrap up, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would certainly be amenable to a change to this that takes out that is $1,000 or more, and if we want to go down to the first dollar, or maybe ethics would define it using the gift limit. That doesn't trouble me. As you noted, $1,000 mimics the disclosure level in our financial disclosures, so it seemed like a good place. But what we do know, and my goal is certainly not to create uncertainty, that we have a certainty about the language in the bill, and that the language in the bill does not include your salary unless you own the business, right? That is not an equity or ownership stake. So a legislator who might stand to benefit or prevent a loss of salary isn't covered by this language. There are public benefit programs that have variable value, right? So it's not every participant in the program. And a legislator who might stand to keep more money in their pocket or put more money in their pocket, depending on the vote on a bill, they aren't covered because you don't have an equity or ownership interest in those programs. So we know that there are holes in this. There are gaps. And the goal here of replacing that equity or ownership language with affect the legislator by a financial loss or gain language is to make sure that we're covering any piece of legislation that comes along, as long as you have that existing language about the substantial class of persons. So just as Senator Reinbold is correct that this language doesn't change someone voting on a budget bill, that's the same as the underlying bill. So it's has no effect there, good or ill. I apologize. I couldn't find a solution for that one on the fly. Well, maybe another bill. But I would certainly be amenable to taking out the $1,000 threshold and doing it from the first dollar. That would be fine. I'd be open to an amendment from Senator Michiki if he'd like. In the end, though, I mean, this comes down to making sure that we just catch all of the income or potential self-dealing that could be there, again, in a real sense, right? Not the speculative, I might potentially, and I appreciate that everyone on this committee discloses a great deal more than the law says we have to. I think that's good. But we have to write the law with that potential bad actor in mind.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Keel. And I do think it's been a good conversation, and I think that as we heard from the sponsor, every word matters, and the word could versus would. You could go through this, the loss, the gain. And I'm not hearing Senator Michiki at this point, but I'm concerned about every word and how it might be interpreted, and doing this on the fly has great concern. I think it might be a conversation that the Legislative Ethics Committee might want to have at some point, because I personally would not mind if it included, for instance, salaries, but the entire wording, if there were a ripple, a domino effect where this would bleed into other things, I'd be really concerned that we'd be restricting ourselves once again. So I'm not going to be supporting the amendment, and I am going to maintain my objection.
Madam Chair, can I correct something for the record, I believe?
Yes, Senator Michiki.
May have been stated incorrectly. The comma after lease saying, or other enterprise, if the interest is substantial, separates, in my view, an equity or ownership interest. I think those are two different minor sections. I think your salary is affected. It always has been. If you have, and that's the reason why I've benefit or loss is important, because if an unethical legislator would let their decisions be influenced by the fact that they might get a little demotion from the business that they're working at or the industry they're working in, then they could change the way they would vote, whether they would support or not support a bill. So in my view, and certainly the other the way that we've always regarded it in this legislature, we have lots of precedents, is that if it could potentially affect your salary if you were the only one in that pool, or if you were affected differently than the members of that pool, then you would have a conflict as well.
Senator Baczycki, would you repeat, point out again in the language where you're talking about, you mentioned a comma. I just wasn't on the page there, so I wasn't with you. Where?
Well, it doesn't say and.
So you're on page 2.
So page 2, line 20. It says, has an equity or ownership interest in a business, investment, real property, lease, or other enterprise if this interest is substantial. And that's how we've been viewing that in the legislature for years, that includes employment, or we would have never said that we have a potential or a real conflict in almost any case. That would specifically only limit it to a contract that the legislator was being offered themselves for action. So there's plenty of precedent. I think that's what that says. It certainly should include your job, and that's the way we've always regarded it with the existing ethics laws that we have on the books today.
So the language other enterprise is where that would capture everything else. Is that what I'm gathering? And it does. I'm seeing a logical line there. Is that correct, Senator Baczycki? Am I following you?
That is my view, and it's the way that we've always regarded that. Ethics laws, when we report whether we have a perceived or actual conflict.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, we can certainly ask legal if that's their interpretation, if that's what they would like to do.
And we do still have Dan Wayne on the line, because actually it would then it. If this is correct, other enterprise incorporates it, it pretty much would make the amendment unnecessary. So, Dan Wayne, are you online? And have you tracked the conversation here?
Yes, I've been listening to the conversation, Madam Chair. I don't know of an ethics opinion that treats other enterprise as including salary, and I don't. I guess I think it could be interpreted that way. It would might be a little bit of a stretch, but.
Madam Chair.
It's not very clear, I think.
Okay.
You know.
And Mr. Wayne, adding that there has been precedent as far as the declarations of conflict over the years that have been people standing up in regard to salary, and that's the only place where it makes sense. Does that precedent affect that and strengthen case?
Madam Chair, if you're talking about declarations of conflict of interest on the floor, I really can't speak to what's in the mind of people who are reporting, who are making those declarations. I do know that there's never been a person who's been allowed to abstain from voting after declaring a conflict under the old rule.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wayne. Do you have a follow-up, Senator Baczycki?
Whether they were able to abstain is irrelevant in this conversation. What's relevant in this conversation is the fact that those of us that have had jobs or invested in industries outside of the legislature stand up every time because of the salary aspect, which I think creates precedent. And I think, or to me or other enterprise says, hey, whether you have an owner or equity ownership or not, in those other specific areas, if you have an enterprise where you're affected outside of that substantial class of persons, you have a conflict that you should declare. And if that conflict is outside of those individuals, then you should ask to be excused from voting. Our rules, that is correct, that I've been here 6 years, I've not seen someone that was allowed to not vote, but I've also not seen a case where someone had a contract that is affecting them differently than others. If I saw that case, I would likely stand up and make a much bigger deal about it. If that individual was getting a direct benefit that other members of a substantial class or other Alaskans that are in that class were not receiving. So we don't really have a contract test case, but if we did, I would imagine that they would be allowed to not vote in that case.
Thank you, Senator Reinbold.
Okay, so this is one reason I'm going to vote no, and maybe I'm going too far, broad here. But for example, if they put a trail around our house, they show that houses increase, let's say, somewhere between 5% and 10%. If trails and recreational facilities, that can increase the value of my house. Do I need to declare not support any outdoor recreation or trail bills or anything that would affect that? Or deal with that, DNR or whoever's, putting the trails in. What about the nonprofits? If there's any grants in anywhere for nonprofits, how's that going to affect spouses? Grants, for early education, block grants, whatever. I don't know if that's going to impact, different people. Like, let's say I have a daughter-in-law that's a teacher. I don't know if that's going to, impact her or not. Medicaid expansion was huge. 230,000 people are on public assistance. What if there's someone in someone's family? Is that a benefit? I don't know. But basically what this is trying to force us is the world has to stay stagnant. You can't have investments. You can't have things up and down. Everything has to stay just frozen, because you can't have anything off over $1,000 of positive or negative. And that's just, the reason why I just feel like this is going, too micromanaging.
Okay. And we're going to move on here, but as someone who really looks at every word and the grammar and looking again at what Senator Michiki pointed out on line 21, the word interest is used. It says interest in a business, investment, real property, lease. And then that when it talks about the other enterprise, it repeats the word interest. So that's a separate group. So it's not an equity ownership in another enterprise. It's simply an enterprise if the interest is substantial. So I think it really does cover all things. And again, this is for an individual personal gain, and I think the precedent is strong in both the House and the Senate, and I believe we've already covered some of the things that the amendment maker is trying to cover here, and so I think the amendment is not unnecessary. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as you mentioned the grammar, and I think it's important, I think our colleague at the end of the table has demonstrated again going above and beyond the minimums the law requires, and that's admirable. But if you read what's here, right, that second interest is in part of a subjunctive clause, if the interest, so it's descriptive. It's not a separate interest. And when you look at the whole what this bill would do unamended, the sentence would have to read without the preliminary clause of equity or ownership interest. It would have to read, a legislator may not vote on a question if the legislature has other enterprise, if the interest is substantial. That doesn't make sense. It would be an ungrammatical interpretation that's necessary to cover this. So, the bill has a ways to go, and I think we've had the substantive discussion. I believe pretty strongly, and I think we heard, and I realized we were asking him on the fly, but we heard a pretty good answer from legislative legal that, as written, we don't yet cover salary. And so I think Amendment 3 takes care of that and is a good tweak. Even if we have that same threshold to kick in as we have for our disclosures kick in, I think this is a good cleanup that catches all the situations that would concern us. And again, it's still based on the substantial class. So it's not everybody who gets a PFD. It's not everybody who benefits from Medicaid. So I'm going to stick to Amendment 3 and ask you to vote for it, please.
Okay, thank you. And I'm going to, as the chair, again, use my privilege, and I'm going to take my grammar sword out, and I'm going to get you, Senator Keel, because it would be if the legislature has, and it wouldn't make sense to use the word other if when you're trimming it down. So it would say if the legislature has an enterprise, if the interest is substantial. So I'm going to maintain my objection, and I'm going to ask the Senate Secretary to please call the roll.
Senator Schauer.
No.
Senator Muchiki.
No.
Senator Keel.
Yes.
Senator Reinbold.
No.
Chair Hughes.
No.
One yay, four nays.
So on a vote of one yay and four nays, the amendment fails. All right. Is there any further discussion? And thank you to the we'll keep you here for a minute just in case there are any closing comments to members. Senator Muchiki.
Madam Chair, I'll make it very brief. I did not hear any resolve. I heard an unusual comment from Leg Legal that we often struggle with in the phrasing of things, but we heard that it was a stretch, which I think is a interesting response. But we did not hear resolve that it did not cover that issue, which I think it does. I want to remind people that ethics laws only affect the ethical and the generally and nearly ethical. They do not affect the unethical. The unethical love ethics laws. And anyone that's ever been a problem in this building on paper looks quite ethical. It was outside of our ethics laws and our reporting where things became illegal and were unethical to the point of being illegal. So I just want to remind people of that. We're trying to change this law so that it works. It allows legislators to remain ethical yet can operate to represent their constituents. Mm-hmm. I'm a guy that from the oil and gas industry that is a fisherman from a district of people in the oil and gas industry that are fishermen. That's how it works in our government. And when you look across the U.S., you see miners from western states that are in mining districts. It's a representative form of government, and I hope this building is filled with people that understand our industries, yet they should not benefit from their actions here. And I believe what we've done today separates those two and allows them to be ethical yet still represent those districts that happen to be fishermen and miners and oil and gas people and teachers and whatever else Alaskans do for a living. So I think it's a good balance. But I just want people to remember that it's like locks on doors are for the honest and not for criminals, because criminals find a way in anyway. I just think that's an important way to split the two. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Muchiki. Are there any further comments? Senator Keel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've spent all our time at this meeting talking about Section 2 of the bill. And I want to go back to Section 1, which fixes the official action part of House Bill 44. It needs fixing. I genuinely agree with the sponsor that it went too far and made it really difficult to do the job that Alaskans elected us to do. So I'm kind of torn here over what to do with the bill as a whole. Section 1's a good change in the law, and I think we need it. My concern, as you've heard today, is that Section 2 dials back, I think, a little too far some of the reforms in 44 that served to shine a little more sunshine on what we do. And you know, my colleague used the phrase that ethics laws are for the ethical and nearly ethical. I get the argument, and I think the truly malign hopefully don't get elected, but they're real hard to catch. It's a little bit like that padlock on your locker, right? they're for keeping honest people honest, right? And so sometimes making it tougher can have a good effect too. So I'm not going to object to the bill moving today. I'm not sure I can support it in the end. I think it resets a little too far back. So that I just wanted to put those comments out there for everyone's consideration.
Thank you for your comments, Senator Keel. Are there any further comments? So, Vice Chair, what is the will of the committee?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 89, Work Order 31-LS0209/U, as amended with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
And seeing no objections, the bill moves from committee, and it will move with Ledge Legal having the authority to make any necessary conforming changes for the amended document. Just want to put that on the record. All right, that concludes our business for today, and I ask the committee members to please stay and sign the paperwork. And on Friday at 1:30 here in this room, we'll meet to take up Senate Bill 23, Appropriation Supplemental Payments of Prior Years PFDs, and also Senate Bill 24, PFD Supplemental Payments, both bills coming from the governor. And seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 2:32.